I'm Kara Lawrence. It's 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. Today I'm thrilled to have two musicians in the studio with me. One, a familiar voice, Andrew Rathbun, professor of jazz saxophone at Western Michigan University, and a special guest, composer, arranger, conductor, Vince Mendoza, whose career and music we're going to be examining today in anticipation of a concert tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. So nice to have you here, Mr. Mendoza.
Thank you.
Andrew Rathbun.
Thanks for having us again, Kara.
Your career is one that I have struggled to find a full road, straight line into, because your associations with people from the jazz world, from the pop world, from the orchestral world is strong. You have many, many friends out there, and it's hard to say what kind of
right.
performer and artist
right.
that you are.
Right.
Could you perhaps fill us in on what you consider yourself to be?
No. I think of myself as a musician first, of course, but as a child starting to learn music, I really wanted to be involved in everything. And as we were talking about earlier, I grew up listening to the radio and imagining myself in the studio with Aretha Franklin and all the Philadelphia sound artists and making music and writing arrangements and writing the songs. And as I got older, it started to shape its way into a certain reality of finding musicians to work with, writing my own music, working in the studio, finding opportunities to express myself. And I'm fortunate it's manifested itself into a lot of beautiful opportunities, and I'm proud of the recordings that I've made. But mostly happy that I've been able to work with so many wonderful musicians.
A couple weeks ago, I read a truly eye-opening print interview with Quincy Jones, an arranger, and someone that you would have a lot of things in common with.
I think we all read that.
But the quote that stood out for me was, the gift he's most grateful for is the ability to put his feelings onto printed
right.
paper in the form of music.
Right.
And it seems to me that that's exactly what you do as well.
Right. Well, Quincy's work, of course, has been an influence on me too. And over the years, the opportunities I've had to be with him and soak up his vibe and his enthusiasm, it's evident to me that his aim is somewhat similar to my aim, to be with great musicians and create opportunities for people to make music together and inspire them to do so. And he's, of course, a master at doing that. And I learned a lot from the way that he works in the studio. And, of course, he was a great writer as well, and in the early days, he continued some of the traditions of the early, Kansas City arrangers, Kansas City style arrangers, working with Basie Band and Ray Charles, and his own approach to writing, and that, of course, funneled very easily into Frank Sinatra's world and Billy Byers and those. Those writers that worked with Frank, with Quincy, you may know that Quincy at the Sands, or Frank Sinatra at the Sands record, he developed this career by meeting different people and creating environments of making music together, and as a result, his output is so varied, with so many different artists, different styles of music, and. And that's how it's done. You're a creative artist, and you meet people, and they inspire you, and you meet other people, and that's a beautiful way to live.
Why did you consider the whole scope of arranging between different styles, and instead of just saying, well, I should specialize in one thing and become the person known just for that.
Yeah, I don't really know how to do that. I don't think it's possible for me to do that because I'm interested in a lot of different styles of music, and some styles really found me. You know, when people that I meet whose music interests me, I'm drawn to work in that environment, and sometimes I have control over it, and sometimes I don't, and I'm happy when things come to me that I have never heard before that interest me, and it's fun to explore those areas.
You were a performer in college. Your instrument
was, yes. I'm now a member of Trumpet Players Anonymous.
Much like Quincy.
Yes, Quincy. There's a lot of the Rangers used to play trumpet. I don't know what that is. Maybe this sort of drove us away from the instrument. You know.
Well, what have you been working on lately?
Wow. I just finished a concerto for orchestra that was premiered last week in Prague with the Czech National Symphony. So that's the new thing that I was deep in the hole working on the last few months. And I'm working with Josh Redman with the Luxembourg Philharmonic in a couple of weeks. We're going to Saskatoon next week to do some of the arrangements I wrote for Joni Mitchell's projects. We're going to do them live for the orchestra there. And I have a few other things coming down the road, but a lot of traveling. But I'm happy to be here in Kalamazoo.
How do
with you, Kara.
Well, thank you very much. How do you and Andrew Rathbun know each other? Maybe Andrew can chime up.
We sort of had an email correspondence for a while regarding something I did for the Metropole Orchestra. They were looking for arrangers for a vocalist, and I think Vince recommended me for that. So I wrote an arrangement for that. And then I've just always wanted to have him here ever since I got here. I've been sort of bothering him like, all right, let's go. Let's get you up here. So it's just fantastic to have had him here and had him work with the students. You know, some of the things he's done during the rehearsals I think have been kind of revelatory for many of them.
Many of whom are writers and arrangers.
Yes. I mean, exactly. Yeah. Not only, you know, has he shown them some great, you know, things in regard to writing during the master classes, but just the rehearsal technique has been very interesting.
It's in your career, Vince, you have to prep orchestras quickly.
Right. Yes.
For studio recordings.
Yes.
And make sure that they're kind of flawless.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's part of the discipline of course, being a conductor. But it's a special kind of conducting because you don't really get a lot of time to engage the player in a way that you think suits the music perfectly. And so you really have to find a way to get them into your world quickly. And, you know, provided the musicians are open and generous enough to make that happen, it works. It doesn't always work like that, of course. But in this case, we have a couple of days, and Andrew and the other faculty members have been prepping the students beautifully. And, you know, it's easy for me just to kind of waltz in and count off the songs, and it sounds good. But, you know, they put a lot of work into making it happen.
But I also will say that I'm sure in a lot of these circumstances where Vince doesn't have a lot of time to work with the orchestra, part of the reason it's able to get to a certain level so quickly is how well the music is put together. There is not a note out of place. Everything is completely ready to go. So it's more difficult with less well-crafted music to get an orchestra sounding good in a short period of time. And, you know, he's one of the best craftsmen in terms of this kind of writing for the orchestra on the planet. So that's one reason why I think he's able to go into certain situations with very little time and have the music sound good, like, right out of the gate.
And you're going to hear it tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It's a concert featuring the Western Michigan University Jazz Orchestra and members of the Western Michigan University Symphony Orchestra.
Ooh.
I'm so curious about this blend. There is a 7 o'clock pre-concert talk, which is also part of the package, and details are online at wmich.edu/music/events or go to the MillerAuditorium.com ticket page and find out more about the admission there, admission at the door as well. Let's take a break and hear a piece of music. You suggested Otoño. Would you introduce this for us like the radio DJ you secretly
Otoño.
Really
Otoño is from my CD called Nights on Earth, which came out in 2011. And it's actually a piece that was dedicated to my father, who he's been gone 11 years now. So he was a big flamenco fan and an aspiring classical guitar player on the side of being a surgeon and a beautiful man. But he inspired my love for that music, classical guitar music, but also flamenco music. And I worked with a lot of flamenco musicians over the course of my career as a result, all over the world. And so this piece, as part of the record, we had some guest artists and flamenco musicians and some guys from L.A. and in Paris and everywhere. So I hope you'll enjoy it. It's Otoño.
We just heard Otoño by Vince Mendoza, and we're sitting here in Studio A with Vince Mendoza, the composer and arranger, and Andrew Rathbun, who is on the jazz faculty at Western Michigan University. Mr. Mendoza's works will be performed by the Western Michigan University Jazz Orchestra and members of the Symphony Orchestra tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Tickets available at the door, and you can find out more right now at MillerAuditorium.com. And Vince, I should let listeners in on some of the artists they may have heard of that you have worked with in your career, and it's quite a long list. You mentioned Joni Mitchell. You've also had collaborations with Sting and Elvis Costello and Bjork, more on the pop side of things. But then you look at some of the great jazz artists of our time, and you see John Scofield, Charlie Hayden, Joe Zawinul, and it goes back quite a while. You were pretty much active since the early 90s. So
it doesn't seem like it's that long ago. Though,
yeah,
does
no, it?
It
doesn't. It doesn't at all. I was there too.
Early 90s.
Are you also an engineer? Do you sit in the control room and say, that needs to be sweeter, that needs to be softer, that needs to be stronger?
Well, there's a certain amount of that goes into producing records that you need to have a handle on how you want the soundscape to be shaped. And so although I'm not kicking the engineer out of his chair or her chair and you know, turning the knobs and but there is a certain amount of input that I have to the way that things end up sounding, depending on whose record it is. Of course, if I'm asked to work on Sting's record, then I'm not, you know, running into the control room and telling him to turn down the vocals.
Well, what I heard on this last track was an emphasis on beauty and flow
thank you.
Might have in some ways disguised the complexity of a piece. There's a lot going on
right
in the song.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot going on, and I think that part of appreciating the depth of a recording is that you can go back and go, oh, yeah, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, go back for more. Yeah.
Oh, who's that? Oh, that's Larry Golding's playing the organ. Holy smokes. You know, I didn't even know he played the organ. Well, you know, that will lead you to other Larry Golding's organ recordings, and New Inlay, of course, on that one, too. So I think the more you listen to it, the more you hear it. And if you construct it that way, even when you listen to a live concert, you know, you listen to the same piece 10 times and you might hear other aspects of it that didn't come through the first time.
Would you talk about your work with the Metropole Orchestra? This
Yes.
might have a lot of meaning for tonight's program.
Yeah. Well, the Metropole Orchestra is a Dutch group that was founded in 1945 after the war. It was part of the Dutch radio system, so it was at the service of the radio broadcasters. And more likely than not, in those days, it was playing a live broadcast of a concert or an accompaniment of an artist. It was on television a lot in those days, the 60s and 70s. I began as a guest conductor with the Metropole in 1995, and I brought some of my music. In fact, I worked with Bob Mintzer the first time there. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, my manner and vibe resonated with the orchestra enough that they started asking me to come back as a guest conductor and working with other artists, you know, conducting other music than my own. And in 2005, they asked me to be the chief conductor. So I put in 9 seasons with the Metropole as the chief conductor. But the instrumentation was, strangely enough, based on the Paul Whiteman Orchestra instrumentation, which is sort of a big band with a few strings and a couple of orchestral woodwinds thrown in and the kitchen sink worth of, yeah, guitar. And
banjo? I'm pretty sure Paul Whiteman liked that jazz banjo there.
Yeah, I mean, banjo and the tuba and all that. I think, you know, we don't use banjo very much in that
no,
context.
Oh,
but
maybe
but
it'll the, make a comeback.
Well, the guitar player does play banjo, and every once in a while we ask him to do that, but grudgingly he does so. The instrumentation maybe has grown a little bit with the string section, but it's ostensibly the same. So the instrumentation we're using tonight on some of the pieces is that Metropole instrumentation, and then some of the pieces have been more symphonic instrumentation with bassoons and, you know, clarinets and
alto,
you know,
flutes,
alto flutes, and, you know, more French horns than one, you know, 4 horns, and it's more symphonic in its orchestration. But some of the pieces, like the Miracle Child piece, for example, was written for the Metropole Orchestra, so it had that instrumentation originally.
With all these historic examples going back to the beginning of jazz, it's strange that I would think of jazz as not having strings,
right.
A string section.
Well, that's what most people think, and generally it's it's not part of the lexicon of the string, average string player to do so. However, I have to admit that in the last 5 or 10 years, the string players that I have met have been very versatile and interested in all styles of music and really ready to jump in the water when you ask them. And so I'd like to see it happening more often. And I do see it in the colleges and the university where I teach at USC in Los Angeles. The players are interested in everything. And the students here are also very interested in this music and
following
and
suit.
It happen. And so I see it growing. Of course, in 1945, it was a different story, and you know that was a brave new world for string players, and it wasn't. There weren't too many jazz violinists in those days. Maybe Ray Nance and
Stefan Grappelli.
Yeah, Stefan was a young man in those days, yeah. But Stefan and Joe Venuti and Stuff Smith, of course, you know.
And they're all self-instructed, right?
Yeah. Self-instructed. And there was a certain great thing about that, too, because the technique that came about with the right hand, the bow hand, it was necessary for a jazz player to figure out how to play jazz inflection with the right hand, and that's something that doesn't get taught in the classical canon. So that's another important skill that the string players need to have a handle on.
But if it's a Vince Mendoza composition, you better expect some beautiful string sounds here.
Well, I should hope so. Thank you, Cara.
The concert again is tonight at 7:30, and we should possibly sample a little more music here and give you a chance to sit back. So anything spring to mind that we can listen to?
If you have the Epiphany CD queued up, there's a piece that we're going to play tonight that featuring the Professor Rathbun on the saxophone as a special surprise for the orchestra. He's going to come out and play a piece that I wrote called Ambivalence. And that comes from my CD called Epiphany that I recorded with the London Symphony Orchestra. And it's featuring Joe Lovano on the tenor saxophone, and it's called Ambivalence.
That's great. I'm with Vince Mendoza and Andrew Rathbun. Come see them tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. A pre-concert talk available at 7 o'clock. Tickets available at the door. More information at wmich.edu/music/events. Music of Vince Mendoza. We heard a tune called Ambivalence.
Ambivalence.
I'm with Vince Mendoza and Andrew Rathbun, if you just tuned in. And Andrew will be the soloist tonight in a concert of Mendoza's music, which covers at least a couple decades of your activity.
Yes.
And perhaps you could tell us a little more about where you're pulling your selections from tonight.
Well, the earliest piece that we're playing tonight is was actually written for my son 19 years ago. He's 19, so that's quite a ways. It seems like yesterday, but it's sort of a cliche when he says that, but it's true.
It's true,
ladies and gentlemen. The newest one is an arrangement of the piece called "Poem of the Moon," which is another track from the Nights on Earth record. Oh, yeah, actually, the newer ones come from the big band. There's a piece called Homecoming and Keep It Up, which is they're both big band pieces from the CD Homecoming that came out in the fall. And it's nice to be able to play that music live with the band, and they're doing a great job with it.
So they've been preparing for a while for that, and I'm sure, Andrew, you would not accept anything less than prepared for this.
Yeah, no, we got the music. You know, we bothered Vince incessantly, like, please send the music so we can start rehearsing. So we started, a couple weeks ago. The orchestra started about 2 weeks ago, and the big band's been working on their selections a little bit longer, just trying to get it road ready for when the maestro appears, so it sounds close.
The challenging part about this music is that every piece is so different in attitude and stylistic reference And that really makes it much more challenging for the musician to step in and play the whole concert because, you know, yeah, you may be great at playing swinging music, but now we're going to play flamenco rhythms, and now we're going to play something funky, and now we're going to, you know, play angular melodies. And you know, I think Andrew has done a great job to prepare the musicians.
So much fun to go into the scores and look at the architecture of how it's put together. And I definitely was taking notes like, oh, look at this. Write it down, you know, because a lot of the music is really intricate. There's a lot of motion and, you know, moving parts. And in such a big ensemble as the orchestra, it's easy to miss things, you know. So it required me to take some things apart and then sort of reconstitute them in the rehearsals, even just for me to see like, okay, are we getting it? Are we playing it correctly? And then we could sort of put everything back together and see how the sum of the parts all fit together.
You mentioned, you know, the craftsmanship, the feeling of rightness as a player when you play a Vince Mendoza chart. What are some of the other things that tell you this is a Vince Mendoza tune?
Well, like I mentioned before, the craftsmanship is always impeccable. He has an incredible knack for melody, and he's not afraid of a beautiful melody. I mean, there's obviously, even in some of the more astringent things, we haven't really listened to anything this morning that's, you know...
harder hitting.
Yeah, not even harder hitting in terms of aggression, but just harmonically a little bit more cutting. Even in those situations, the melodies are just, they're brilliant. They're very, I hate to use the word catchy or having a hook, but there's always something that makes them very memorable and very quickly draws you in. It's very easy to listen to his music and digest the melodic content in a short period of time, so it really sticks with you, which in today's environment of modern jazz, I wouldn't say that that's a real hallmark. There's, you know, I think there's a lot of things that are very interesting to listen to, but they're more like math projects than something that strikes you in the heart. Yeah. You don't, and I'm interested in that music too. I'm not saying I'm not, but I think that that's one thing that makes his music really readily identifiable.
Vince, do you have a story about the Grammys? I don't get to often ask my guests about this. Do you have any Grammy stories?
Grammy stories,
yes. You've been there like six times at least.
The first or the second Grammy that I won was for the Brecker Brothers' Some Skunk Funk record that I did with the WDR Big Band many years ago now. And they had the ceremony in L.A. at this Staples Center, and they had the pre-ceremony at the convention center there. So, you know, they invite you to come up and get your thing and give your speech, and then they, you know, lead you around to the various media thing. But anyway, so you go down there, but you have to make sure that you get down there soon enough, otherwise they think that you're not there. They go, oh, well, we accept the award on your behalf, and then they move on to the next thing. They don't do that on TV, obviously, because you have to be there, but a lot of people don't show up to the pre-ceremony. So you have to make sure you get down there. So when they announce my name, of course, I was very, like, I got to get down there, man, you know, because they're going to, so... I went down there. It was partly because of the shoes I was wearing. I had like new shoes, and so I fell up the stairs on my way up to get the to get the Grammy, and that was it was it's probably on tape somewhere where they follow you up there. And I fell up the stairs, and
wow.
It wasn't the most graceful, you know, cool jazz guy entrance. So just my advice to you is when you're going up the stairs, you know, take your time. Let them know you're there.
Get used to the
shoes.
Know,
for all of you out there that want to go up and get that thing.
Do some practice running.
And wear decent shoes, for God's sake.
Shoes that you can make it up the stairs.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a note for all the young folks out there. Any interesting questions from students while you've been here?
Well, the questions were all over the place, but the master classes, the second one, well, I gave two of them. The first one was about arranging in general and types of dealing with the orchestra and how to recognize what the story is that you need to tell and how to embrace that story in a way that's going to make the listener feel what you want about what you want them to feel about the lyric. And that's a very sensitive operation for an arranger, because you really are at risk of getting so self-indulgent in your craft that you forget that there's a story there that needs to be told. And so aspects of storytelling with the orchestra, as esoteric as that sounds, has very, you know, concrete ideas set to them with regard to orchestration and the way that you deal with the instruments and texture and density and all of that. So they ask some good questions about how to obtain or how to create certain textures, yeah, in the orchestra and how to tell a story in a certain way. The second day was more about structure, composition structure, and also the nature of improvisation with composers. You know, when do you draw the line between what you improvise and what you decide is the composition? And for jazz composers, that's a really important thing, to have a period of time of discovery that you don't edit yourself. You know, you're just feeling that, as Andrew said, that sort of visceral reaction, that the, you know, immediate creative impulse, I feel is most important for a composer. That, you know, we too soon get into the activity of editorial and, you know, make this longer, make this shorter. You know, oh, we need a 33/8 bar here, and oh, you know, it wouldn't be cool if we did this, that. But that original creative impulse to get us started is important. So, and that happens with jazz. It happens with film music. We talked, there were questions about film composing and whether that creative period of, you know, playing in the water before you decide on something is important also for a film composer, which it absolutely is. You have to get the sound of the sound of the emotions of the story. You know, what does that sound like? And those kind of experimentations are important for composers. And so there were questions about that too.
On the opposite side of things, on the editing side, you're reminding me of a conversation I had last week with a songwriter who's been at it for about 40 years. And one thing he's developed over the years now is to hear a song on the radio, say, and just have that, and just know that they stopped when they thought it was good enough, mm-hmm, but they could have tweaked it just a little more to make, right, it a better, right, song. And that was something he can hear after writing, you know, 3-minute folk tunes for a long time.
Yes.
Is that also something that, I mean, you also have to address with your pieces?
Yeah. Well, of course. Yeah. I think I'm most interested in structure and how that relates to the ideas. But in the end, I want the ideas to dictate the structure. And I read an interesting book the other day about songwriters and interviews with songwriters, and Bob Dylan gives this interview, and he nailed it when he said that, you know, I want the song to have this one creative idea, and then the rest of the operation is getting out of it. You know, how do I, you know, work my way through the song to get out of it, you know, and maybe that's a composer's dilemma that I have students that come to me too. I have this idea and I'm doing A, B, and C, but I have a hard time getting out. You know, how do you get, you know, how do you finish it? How do you know that you're done? And Dylan's response was, if you can't get out of it, then the idea wasn't good enough to begin with. And, you know, so that the creative part of it really dictates for me the structure. And even with the songs, if you look at some of James Brown's 1970s output, his forms were really very much dictated by the text and the groove. And it wasn't that he was so much counting the 8-bar phrases like or the 12-bar phrases as they might have been doing within the Brill Building era of songwriters. He was, saying what he wanted to say. And when he was done, then we go on to the next phrase, and then he says what he wants to say.
So that dictates the shape of
that's
that
right.
song.
That's right.
Yeah. The other big part of your musical life is taking someone else's maybe original song or story and creating an arrangement for it. You excited or intimidated to take on this double album travelogue with Joni Mitchell?
The only thing that intimidated me about that music was its history. That in particular the songs from Blue and Hejira, the records that are sort of in the pantheon of 20th century popular music. Those scared me, and Both Sides Now, of course, from the first record, was something that I had to really sort of pace around for about 2 weeks before I could put a pencil on the paper to really think of, what am I going to do with this piece to make it different, better, or, a more meaningful experience, but it all really came down to the text. And if you forget about the history and you forget about for a second the music, the artist, the singer, anything, you forget about all of that. There is a text there, a story, an emotion, and you go there first and work your way out. And that was for me the way through that music, and it was a really wonderful experience. She encouraged painting those lyrics, and for an arranger composer, that's thank you.
License to the Thrill.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I will.
If I could just add my two cents, I think those two records are masterpieces. Both Sides Now and Travelogue. I put them in the same category as Miles Ahead or Sketches of Spain. Those they're really for me personally. They were incredibly revelatory musical experiences. We've worn it. You can't wear a CD out, but if it was an LP, we literally would have worn them out. They're just startlingly beautiful pieces of music. From the beginning of the record to the end, and again, there's just not one single note out of place, and every song is framed just so exquisitely beautifully. They're incredible.
Was the process an ongoing one where you started recording after just a few arrangements, or did you work
until
the
It was a Mount Everest of scores for that thing. We did everything. The prep was all done ahead of time, and we recorded, I think it was a week of sessions. It wasn't too long, a week, something like that. But the music was constructed, piece by piece. I would write something, and we would make the demo tapes, and Joni would hear stuff, and we would talk about it and make changes, if anything. And then Larry Klein would show up the next day and say, okay, well, we're going to do Amelia now. Like, oh, no. Okay, we're going to do For the Roses. Oh, no. Okay, let's tackle that one. And they're all such amazing songs in and of themselves I hoped to do justice to the text and their history. So it was quite a long process to prepare it and a short process to record it. But it was really a wonderful experience.
If you tuned in just now, my guest is Vince Mendoza, celebrated Grammy-winning composer, arranger, and conductor who will be featured, whose music will be featured tonight by the University Jazz Orchestra and members of the WMU Symphony Orchestra. It's bringing together a lot of student musicians who've been working on these very special arrangements spanning a 20-year period for several weeks. The concert starts at 7:30 p.m. If you'd like to arrive early for a little get-to-know-you session at 7.
I'll be there.
Okay. Double duty. That's at 7 o'clock, and tickets will be available at the door. They're also available ahead of time through the Miller Auditorium box office, and that website is milleraudatorium.com or 387-2300 if you'd like to call the box office. We are so close to the top of the hour, and I have no doubt that you have something scheduled at 11 o'clock. So why don't we listen to something and say our final goodbyes for today?
Why don't you play Mona Lisa? Because it's right, it's dialed into your time limits. Mona Lisa is the one of the tracks from the new Gregory Porter CD, Nat King Cole and Me, which is out now. And I did all the orchestral arrangements and produced the CD for Gregory, and it's a wonderful set of songs, and you know, Mona Lisa is one of Nat King Cole's big hits, and we have a bit of a different treatment to it.
Thank you for such a special hour.
Thank you, Carl.
Thanks.
Your soul light.